This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right. We need to get serious. We got a lot to dig into, a lot to catch up on. Hi, Austin. Not a question, but rather feedback for the bonus podcast you did on Breath of the Wild. Keep it coming. I really enjoy deep dives on a single topic, something I feel long-form audio is particularly suited to. I love having things like this in my feed. I'm yet to add something to your question bucket because the caliber of questions is so far is intimidatingly good. But if I have something that I can contribute, I will be sure to do so. Keep up the good work. Really enjoy hearing from you, Patrick and Danielle. Signed, Jesse.
Give me the date. Hold on, Hold on. All right. So Breath of the Wild, spoiler cast. Mm-hmm. So that Switch, Breath of the Wild, March 2017.
I'm going to guess.
The spoiler cast has got to be a couple weeks after that, right? So I'm saying early April, like April 3rd.
I'm gonna counter this. April 17th.
Wednesday's date is May. Spoiler
Do you have
cast.
A suspicion?
They went into spoiler
April
cast.
April 31st.
So yeah, I regret. I'm moving to May. It's going
to
be
you're
May.
Moving
I'm
to May.
Okay. I moved to May.
I'm going to shock you all. This came in 4th of March 2017. I don't understand.
Hey, wait. What? Sorry. How the fuck did they do that? Wait, that's weird.
They said spoiler cast, right?
Yes.
You know, didn't get that game early?
Sorry, no. Bonus podcast.
Bonus podcast. Also, that's...
Okay. Sorry, I thought I heard spoiler, and so I was trying to think...
Hey, Ren, maybe don't... on a podcast...
Kato, can we delete that legitimately?
Wait.
I know you don't need to call attention to it.
Yeah. Fair. Good counterpoint.
Waypoint blazing new trails in every medium.
All the way, up to the end. You know, no credit cards on this one, but hey, give us time.
No, I can
give
do
us
that.
Exactly.
What's good, Internet? It's May 5th, 2023, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 564. I'm your host, Rob Zachney, and I'm joined by Ricardo Contreras.
I like that the structure as we go on, like, just things are moving. Things are shifting.
Don't worry about it.
It's amazing.
Patrick Klepek.
I was at my kid's open house, and I heard someone say, the last day of school is June 2nd, and a single tear rolled down my face because I was like, yeah, it is the last day of school, motherfucker. Because I'm losing my job on the same day that my kid goes to his top being a first grader. God damn it.
I have no money in the bank because of you people. Because of this school. And Renata Price.
Hi.
Are you ready for graduation day?
damn right I am. I love growing up.
I feel like we should just have like a clock going that when it goes off, Rob has to go one question up on the chain. It doesn't matter where the discussion is just like just go wherever you just pick the question, you got to go one up and just start reading it. Or maybe every segment break. Every time we're moving from one thing to the next, Rob, you must pick from that bucket and go up from the bottom up.
I have a question. What's the number, Rob? Can you say the number out loud into the microphone?
Sorry, what number?
The mailbag number?
Yeah, the mailbag number.
Let's see here. Oh, 5,622.
Okay.
Kings of efficiency.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't think we're gonna get to all of them, but we're gonna do our damnedest. So hey, speaking of graduation day, achieving new stages, growing up, maybe becoming something, more than you were before. I hope that happens to Redfall. I hope that Redfall can go to school and continue to like learn and grow and evolve, because I was crushed by disappointment playing Redfall, and I went in with like, I thought moderate expectations. I really thought like this game was going to get a bad rap, and y'all, I think we gave it a pretty favorable lab condition.
We gave it arguably the best possible lab conditions, and it still felt really bad.
I mean, because it does this game does come into an environment in which I think there has been a like broader disappointment in Xbox delivering games. I mean, it has not been that long since Hi-Fi Rush, and I think that is going to be one of the best games this year.
It hasn't been that long since Pentiment. Come on, folks.
But I think we are talking, it's a scale difference, right? Like, whatever you think, like you don't like Insomniac Spider-Man games or the God of War games, like there is a certain level and expectation of like these big, like big scaled experiences that Microsoft has just not been able to effectively deliver for the better part of 10 years, you know, outside of like continuing Halo, continuing Gears of War. They just have, they've been a kind of feels like they're spinning their wheels, buying a lot of studios, but then, okay, where are the games from those studios? And Redfall from Arkane, you know, is this actually Harvey Smith's team? Is this something they're working? Like, who knows? Like, it's an Arkane game and was hyped as such. And so I think there's a lot being put on this release that is about broader questions. Like, what is Xbox? What is the state of Xbox? Does this make you scared as hell about what Starfield is or isn't?
Yeah, I so to set the table a little bit, like Redfall is, I think, kind of a neat idea. Certainly it's a, like there is a looter shooter with some like arcane-y take on immersive sim elements. It is,
you can
set
flush
in
the
a,
toilets.
Yeah, so that's, I would argue that's very generous.
It might be, but I'm in a generous mood, and I do think, you know, like there's cool things here. Like the whole thing is, it's a looter shooter set in supernatural horror in small town America.
Hell yeah.
You know, a town has been taken over by vampires, but they're vampires who sort of came about because of an unethical like biotech firm. I think you Ren, you use the phrase, it's like vampire Theranos.
Yes, that is
triggered a vampire apocalypse, and they slowly took over this town. And now in its death throes, they've sort of gone full mask off. They're consuming the sun and preparing their plan to sort of take over the world. And do awaken as one of four characters with different sort of class abilities on this ferry that was supposed to bring people, you know, out of the town to safety. That the vampires, like, it's an arresting image. They, you know, they froze the ocean effectively, not like with ice, but like just paused wave motion.
Like stasis. Everything like it's like, yeah, it's sick. Like it's a, like it's it, like every time I get a glimpse, like up on a hill and look over and see all the water, like just sitting there with boats, like in place. It's a really striking visual, and it's a good one to start on. But you know, like, yeah.
And from there, you make your way back to shore and into the town. You link up with survivors, and you begin doing missions around this town, which is sort of a, you know, decently sized small town, but a lot of wilderness. You know, there's canyons, hills, you know, a lot of like neighborhood city streets, and you're doing missions to go break the vampire's hold on this community. But like one of the really cool things is, rather than just doing, unlike the Left 4 Dead or like Back 4 Blood thing, where every section, every mission you're doing is like a self-contained like level, what's kind of nifty here is that you are very Destiny style. You are in this place, the map is open, and you and your crew are just like wandering through the world, completing these objectives. And I would say, like, you know, there's, you know, as you allude to, Patrick, like there's a lot of arresting imagery here. There's a lot of like cool vibe here. There's a, like what feels like a lot of promise. I was getting Secret World vibes in the opening of this thing. But we were all four of us playing it together. We're all on comms. We're all shooting the shit. It's like the most
different classes, right? Specifically picked like, hey, let's make sure we represent a little bit of the four that are here.
Yeah, and it was, it's just like, this is where like co-op shooters like this are generally at their best, and it did not take long before I began to get a real sinking feeling because I was not having any fun, nor did I really feel like it mattered that y'all were there, really.
Yeah.
Nope.
Did anyone else, so who else like tried it solo for a bit?
I did, mm-hmm. You know, well, you sort of need to get through the opening, like kind of fire station in order to get, like, I think in a position to even play with other characters, or at least that unlocks your first ability.
Yeah.
But I have not spent, I spent a little bit of time outside of that playing on my own and found it to be a confusing experience because the, I had a specific instance, like vampires are like kind of like mini, not even quite mini bosses, but they're like an elevated. Yeah, they're like, yeah, named enemies, like an elevated enemy, like beyond like the cultists that are, those are like your basic soldiers that you're finding all over the place. And I had this sequence where like these helicopters fall down and that's like signals the first major mission that you can go on. But it's a pretty far ways away. And you have the opportunity, and the game actually points this out specifically, is like, hey, you can head right in that direction, or like if you go to the left, there's some other stuff, and like you can find a fast travel point. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. So I start wandering in that direction. I don't have like three other people in this situation, kind of like poking around, like showing me like, hey, I found something, or like there's you know a chest over here that might have some you know drops in it. The game like doesn't have a great visual language for communicating what I should or shouldn't be interested in. It doesn't have a great visual language for communicating. Like usually in an arcane game or an immersive sim, I'm used to the architecture in front of me is inherently interesting. It is here for a reason, meant to be explored. Yeah. And more often than not in this game, it's like I'll walk up to a building and that door is not only locked as though like I, you know, maybe it's locked from a lockpick, but more often than not, it was just locked and there's no way to get into this building. There is no story in here for me to discover. There is no like letters for me to read. And I don't even know where to begin looking for that stuff. So I kind of ignore it. And I was like, fine, I'll just, maybe there's less of that here or it's more contained. I'll just keep walking down this street and we'll see what happens sort of on the combat layer. Well, like I kind of come around a corner and I hear some vampires whispering. I'm like, all right, time to get in a vampire fight. And there's three of them. Get my shotgun out. Got this one umbrella power that you like, it sucks up energy and then you can spit it back out. Doesn't feel really good to use, but I'm, you know, hey, it's early. Like maybe I just don't know how it all feels. And I managed to take them out, stake them, and I'm like, all right, like that was kind of satisfying and kind of interesting. Like, let's go see what the next thing is. And I'd walked 5 virtual feet away from where those vampires had been gathered in a hallway, came back that exact same way, and those 3 vampires were there again, huddling around with the same lines, muttering the same things, and their attention was immediately drawn to me. I was not in a position to win this fight at this point. I'd used up most of my health packs. I'd used a bunch of my shotgun ammo. I immediately die, end up back at the fire station, and sort of just look at myself and go, I don't really want to leave this. Maybe I'll just stay here and hope someone else figures out this whole vampire thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I there was a glimpse when I was playing it alone of like the game this could have been, where like I kind of went into just like, all right, it tells you at the very beginning, it's like, hey, you can just sneak around these people, like stealth is an option, like look for alternate paths. And I played like that first mission where the helicopters come down with that in mind, like sneaking around, trying not to get into trouble too much on the assumption sort of that, like, yeah, if you like take a bad fight, you'll eventually, you know, it'll go bad for you. But, and it seemed like, okay, like maybe this is early. Maybe once I unlock more of my kit, like it'll be a little bit more interesting. And like, I'm being funneled in a situation where like, the fights aren't too hard or anything like that. And then we played together and like started just rolling every single group of enemies we came to, right? There was like maybe one fight during our session that was like a little bit difficult that we can talk about. Yeah.
Enemy,
yeah.
Oh, when the Vex showed up?
And then I like later went back and like played a little bit by myself again and just started getting into every fight I could get into. And like at least at the like standard quote unquote normal difficulty, it was very like, oh, I don't ever need to worry about being caught, it feels like, unless I like see one of those big boss enemies. But like for most of the part, like in like at least the opening areas, it's like it washed away this like tension that was there when I was playing on my own and like trying to do stealth and trying my best not to get like caught out because I thought like, oh, it might go bad. Like that actually doesn't, that was all in me role-playing a different type of Arcane game.
Well, I think that is like a really important note to point out is that it felt like you're role-playing how you would play a Dishonored or less Prey. Prey is a little more, you know, aggressive, but Dishonored, which is, this is specifically.
That's this studio, right? Is the Prey one.
Yes. I mean, a lot of, you know, the creative lead of Prey, left. Calling it the Prey team is always difficult because, like, yes, like this division of Arcane made it. How much of that team made Prey is still here, I don't know. But you are right that technically, like, that was the previous game from the studio. But it seems that, yeah, it's more role playing how you would play. And that extends to the exploration part, right? Like, I feel like I'm role-playing an Arcane, like, in many ways, this feels like it's role-playing an Arcane game, but without the substance to match it. And when you're trying to meet it where you think it's communicating to you on that level, what you just end up finding is that it's not that experience, or it's not as deep. Ren, you had a really interesting point when we were playing together that it feels like the power distribution of these characters is one character that got cut into four pieces, and that if this was all from a power set for one character, it'd be really interesting. You could do some really interesting things, but divided into four, it doesn't always feel whole.
Yeah, and like I also don't think that it really puts you in situations where it asks you to try and use those powers in concert with one another, which is a bummer. I mean, like the solo bit that I played when I played this game a few months ago in like a press event, I would say it was in better shape than what we played today. The performance was better. The enemy AI was working a little bit better. The vertical slice that they showed me was like a bit more coherent than anything I've seen so far in a way that's like really disappointing.
Yeah. Cause you came out of that event, you know, not saying it was going to be great, but that, oh, there could be something here, which is of course the trap of any preview event. Like they are presenting their best foot forward. It is running on a PC with everything cranked up. And then what you actually end up playing can be a slightly different experience. But you know, it was like I picked the purple character because I liked the elevator power. This is a jump. It's still a visually very neat image. And there was a moment where we were going up a canyon, and like I hadn't found a reason to use this power, like practically, like there wasn't any reason to jump in the sky and shoot at an enemy. And the scale of the buildings also don't really require like send somebody up there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just cool. And it is cool. And like the fact that I can jump up on one and then lay another and create a set of platforms would be cool if there had been a discernible reason to do that, except for Kato being like, we're going up these canyons. Wouldn't it be sick if we just jump up the canyons instead? And I was like, yeah, that would be sick. So Kato and I do that.
Yeah.
That was sort of the extent of beyond like laying down one of those. And it is neat to watch my friends shoot into the air, but it didn't seem like it provided any tactical advantage. It was just neat. And you know, it's like, that's one of my primary powers.
It does feel like this is a game that wants you to, like, you see something in the far distance and you, like, clamber up, like, the side of a house to get, like, a better viewpoint of something. And, like, they've left a lot of handholds, so you can do that even if you don't have one of the jumpy powers. But the jumpy power just becomes kind of like this is a shortcut to that instead. Instead of, like, having to clamber up the, like, pipes on the side of the building, I can just go straight up there.
And the thing, it's a small thing, but the thing that you pointed out, Kato, which, like, drove me up a wall more I thought about it, was when you jump in the air, like it doesn't auto sort of like clamber you up something.
Yeah.
And like the way climbing works in this is a little it's just not super clear. It's, it feels very, sometimes leaving it fuzzy is good so that players can feel like they're doing things that they should, quote unquote, shouldn't do, even if the design allows for it. But it didn't feel good to like launch in the air. Like I was using a controller, like hit the A button and hope that that lined up. And I did, like I was able to make it work, but I don't know. There was just something about the verticality, maneuverability elements that just don't, doesn't feel good.
I remember there was a one moment where you were trying to get up onto a roof and you hit the edge and it started to fall down before I had told you you hit the button again.
Yeah.
And what you, your character model was hitting the edge was with their ankles. Like your feet had caught the edge and then you started sliding down. Just like in the,
well, the window. Just like,
yeah.
Oh, the and window then, thing too. Yeah. God, were we, I don't know which, how you got into that house, Rob, but like, you know, these games in general, like present that like, hey, you're going to bust a window, get into it. Ren busted a window that the character model could go through. Kato and I busted windows the character model could not go through.
Not
and
they just
but the window breaks. Yeah. Like you can hit it, it shatters, and then cannot get through. And then we just had to like find the one that Ren had gotten into.
I went into a window and like smashed it, and there was like a window sash that I had to sort of duck under to get into the house.
Yeah. That was the same sort of looking window.
I was crouching.
We were crouching on that windowsill trying to like hey.
Well, maybe, you know, I mean, look, the game is set in Massachusetts, which you wouldn't know judging from the sheer number of Troy Baker doing a like West Texas accent type voice characters that you get in here.
Oh,
it's all like
it was Arcane Austin.
Oh, my God.
Stupid, stupid. I hate.
But yeah, it's like the game is pointedly like this is in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And at every turn, it's like, oh, the dead are walking the earth. I don't know what to do about this, brother. And it's like, we got to get to Marblehead. And it's just absurd. But the other, like, I need to go with the power thing for a second because y'all don't know how good you had it. Because you weren't playing a stealth-focused fucking character in Redfall. I was playing the sniper. My move set to start out was, send your little raven out to gather information. The raven flies like 10 feet, well under the draw distance of the game. So it doesn't, like, you're just like, raven, do you not see the fucking, like, guys coming? And the raven's like, caw, no! And just disappears, and then you got your raven back.
Yeah.
Two, I could turn invisible, which sounds cool, except... The enemies can't fucking see you anyway. There's a point where I like sneaked into like the building where the vampire pirates
pirates.
The vampires are like broadcasting these like honeypot like rescue messages to lure people to their deaths. I sneak in there, and I'm just caught full out like. Exposed in the middle of the room to a couple of like the like human guards in the room, and I see them, they get their like three question marks over their head, and then they don't, nothing happens, and I wait, and they wait, and I wait, and then they're like, is somebody here? And I swear to God, I'm standing dead in like plain view of this character. And so it's like I can turn invisible. That's a power, but it's like it's so moot in a game that works this way.
Mm-hmm. And also there's no reason. You know, we've discussed how maybe there's not a ton of reason to stealth in general, but there's even less reason to do that in multiplayer, right? Like somebody is going to break, open fire, and then all the enemies are going to coalesce, and then suddenly a huge part of your power set. Finding enemies, going invisible, two of those are no longer functionally like doing anything in the midst of the fight, which then is going to require the gunplay to make up for that. And, you know, I don't think it's terrible, but it's not good, right? Like, it's not, it's certainly not
reach terrible.
You might say it's terrible.
Fine. Except for when my sniper broke.
I think it's fine. Well, yeah. Do you want to explain what happened to your sniper rifle?
Basically, whenever I tried to aim, tried to aim down the sight, down the sights, my character, I guess, put the sights just like up to their face, like it looked like it was trying to zoom in. It did the vignetting of going into a sniper sight, and then you could in the dead center was just an opaque sight, like the opaque sight that the model that's on top of my gun as I carry it around, totally blocking the view. Just spectacular.
So yeah, Kato couldn't use, and that never went away. Like that, nope. You could not use scoped weapons for the duration of the session.
I didn't find a different sniper to try to change into, but I swapped that gun out for other guns, and like all the iron sights worked. It was treating that scope, that model, like an iron sight, even though that model is not see through.
Well, just all sorts of other weirdness. Yeah. So we got started late in our like the session we were doing. So I had to jump out after a little while to go pick up my kid from school. And when I came back, I was gone for 25-ish minutes, and y'all had kept playing and done some other stuff. And I managed to get reinvited to the session. And then when I get in, well, for one, it doesn't drop you anywhere near where you are. It's just like, hey, do you want to start at the main area at the start that's very far away from your friends? I guess. Okay. There is fast travel. But like I log in, my character has leveled up, and also like on the right, it shows like 15 weapons that I was like, I wasn't here. Like, what are these weapons? Like, what is the context of them? And it also swapped out my loadout. And it had taken like my greens, my blues, and like, you know, the orange, like, or, you know, like kind of like the weapons, and had taken the ones I'd picked, like my pistol, assault rifle, shotgun. Well, you don't want those anymore. You want three like commons like equipped. And so like the first fight I got into, I'm like, this doesn't feel as why do I have two assault rifles? And it's like, oh, the game just took them away.
Yeah.
And it's just like things.
Yeah.
You know, switch games, progress lost, doesn't show levels representative of what the characters actually are.
This is a wild thing. We had two crashes, and I'm pretty sure let's say like a 70% sure, I guess, that the reason that both of our crashes happened was that one single person in our group leveled. And because it would break, toss everyone out, and then we would come back and like everyone would have, and somebody would have an extra level. And then also when we logged in, it showed everyone's levels incorrectly. It showed like everyone as level one, even though we were all like level two or level three characters. It kept changing.
Ren was like listed as a level two, and then it went down to a level one. And I don't know why. And it was, we don't know, like, is that relative?
Yeah.
Because it's like changing, you know, the characters, because we're in a game that's starting earlier in the story. Is it a bug?
It feels like a bug. Who can say? Connected to the... what I'm pretty sure is that like leveling up just breaks the session, which is rough given that like you want to get into some, like you want to level up, you want those abilities that they've been slowly doling out.
Very slowly.
Yeah, big ol' web of abilities that I'm never gonna see, because that is way more than I want to invest in this.
The web isn't even, here's the thing, the first, like, there's like an inner ring to that web, the things that closest to the center. That's it. That's the abilities. Everything after that changes those abilities slightly.
Yeah,
right. Like those. Yeah, it's not like there's like a million different things. Like you have your set of like three things. It's like two normal ones that you can use regularly, and one that's like an ultimate, quote unquote, that like has a longer cooldown, and then some like health upgrades and stuff.
I mean, I really do think that like, the core problem in this game is that it seems like they stripped the core functionality out of like every one of these abilities and then put it later down the tech tree. Like I cannot get over the fact that to do a bomb jump with the C4, you have to like get to level 5 and upgrade it to that point, because it means that until then I have fuck all to do with that power, right? Like I can throw it at enemies, I guess, but like, I can't do anything more with it. I can't do anything interesting with it. There are no like fun combos I can create with like, you know, Kato or Patrick or Rob in these situations.
Can you light yourself on fire? Isn't that what happened at one point?
Nope. No. It was the environment, right?
Oh, yeah, okay. I thought that was the C4 thing at the end of the helicopter bit.
No, it was the environment, because I kept wandering off because I thought
you started
cool
that fire with the C4, the helicopter fire.
Yeah, but who knows? we
wouldn't know. You had wandered off. So yeah. no one saw.
Cool Renata was hanging out and was kind of wandering off every once in a while. Because I was just like, I don't know. I wanted to find stuff. I was really trying to like the game. I was trying to
find some more gasoline spilled all over. Like that's also like a strange part of the environmental dressing of this game is that there are just batteries, gasoline, ATVs,
the pyramids of car batteries are really fucking weird.
Yeah.
Game wants it's we talked about Dial-In 2, you know, a couple of weeks back, a game like sort of built around chaining elemental attacks and like using that to manipulate the enemies in front of you. This game like wants some of that. So it's like you're just constantly walking around. It's just shimmering gas just spilled on the ground that you can fire at, and that will create fire and occasionally can have sort of like domino effects on like a car nearby. It didn't seem all that functionally. Once you're in the thick of battle, I wasn't really thinking about that stuff all that much. And it's just kind of there. And then you'll notice it. Like its main use was so that I control like the people I was playing with, where if you shoot the electric ones, it'll zap people like a little bit. And so like I would shoot it from afar knowing somebody was walking up to it. It's like, fuck, God damn it. Patrick shot one of the electric things again. It's like, that's the extent of fun I'm getting out of these environmental trappings is screwing with the people I'm playing with, which is, you know, some of that is part of any multiplayer game, but I think it's, you know, Rob, we had this experience with Dead Island 2. What I was hopeful for of that game was, hey, maybe this is just sort of like a podcast multiplayer game. Kind of like how I feel about when I have played like Diablo in the past. And Diablo is a better game. But like, hey, sometimes just having something to do that feels okay with other people is enough. And maybe it doesn't work as well solo, but like maybe like the additive like social atmosphere can make it work. I think we found in Dead Island 2 that was not the case. I think the game, our feelings on it got worse by the time we were done with that, you know, 2 hours in there in co-op. And I don't think the multiplayer, other than just it's always nice to have friends around, I don't know how additive it was, both as we've noted from a lack of a real reason to have the powers intersect with one another or like natural ways for that to occur. And just like combat is not that more interesting with other people.
No, and like so much of it is just like, you know, maybe it changes a bit as the game goes on, but like there just wasn't a lot of interesting things happening to force us to change our tactics. Like it was a lot of like, you know, you mentioned staking the vampires. Like the vampires show up and they're just dudes with slightly more hit points. You shoot the shit out of them, they can warp around a little bit and do spooky vampire stuff, but ultimately you shoot them a lot. And then the twist is at the end, you go up to them and you press F to put a stake through their heart, and they turn into a little pile of ash with little trinkets for you to loot, like apples that the vampire had on them that you can turn into currency. That auto convert into currency.
Yeah.
The minute you pick up a trinket, it's like that's worth this much money. So you're basically just like putting shit in your pocket, and it's like turning into value right away. But even there, it's like, you know, it never feels like, oh, like we missed our window to stake the vampire because, you know, the ads aren't that bad. You can just walk up and do it.
Yeah, the window's
and
long.
Probably somebody has a stake launcher. So when they last hit the vampire with a stake launcher, it's dead anyway. So that isn't gonna matter. The enemies like kind of just proceed directly to you and just sort of like march toward you and open fire, and you just like put them down. There's just like not a real it's not really engaging combat. Some of the weapons you have are cool. I think firing flare guns ruled. Like the flare gun is an interesting thing where I had a double barreled flare gun, and
that's sick.
Yeah, and like the thing is like, oh, so this is the other thing. This game uses projectile weapon like hit tracking really extensively. So like the flare gun is cool, but it is tricky to use because the thing takes forever to fucking fire. Like you press the trigger and you get that whole like delayed whoosh, as the flare like fires up and launches, and then it's really slow. So like you have to really lead the target even at close ranges because this thing is just not going to be that fast. But once it does, it lights them on fire. Bullet drop, a real thing with the sniper rifles in this game. You gotta calculate bullet drop a lot. The UV ray gun, I thought was really fucking cool, and probably the closest I came to like, we're doing it. We're a team. Everybody worked. Everybody gathered around the UV gun.
Yes, that one. The Destiny boss, mini boss.
How does the UV gun work? Like, what makes it? It's a like, beam. Why is that?
You fire beams, and once you fire the beams, it turns a vampire to stone, and then you have to break the vampire once they're turned to stone, and it can help as like a crowd control thing. So like when we were fighting the Siphon, for example, that annoying motherfucker who took all of our blood away from 85 feet. Bad enemy, bad enemy, by the way. Let me just say.
I thought it was neat.
it was our best encounter, though.
At least we died. You know what I mean? Like there was at least some measure of...
Yeah.
Some measure of tension that was lacking. I
mostly felt irritation with the yeah, concept.
No, exactly. I was mostly annoyed. that was the emotion that the Siphon managed to pull out of me. But like, you know, I got downed and then I was just like spraying it with a UV gun from the ground and it kept like turning to stone and then breaking free and then turning to stone and then breaking free and then turning to stone and then breaking free.
But one of those times you turned it to stone, I got close enough to shoot it.
Yeah, you shot it. Yeah, it was great.
Well, its powers were a little bit out of context. It had the Vex style rotating shield, with the gaps in it, But it didn't match anything we've seen the vampires do.
They were water. It was water shields, and he was in the port area of the map, right?
Cool. That's great. The problem is, Kato, that none of the guns are high enough damage for to actually like go through the fucking shield and like kill them in a reasonable amount of time. I felt
like
it was
to aim for the gaps. Like the shields are
no, I know you off. Have to aim for the gaps. The gaps are really small, and they don't last gaps? Long. And so I would fire my assault rifle and get like three shots between the gaps before it would like turn again, and then it was like doing no fucking damage.
This is the one time that I found being above helped. Like I got onto a roof,
right? Because you could look down
during that time, and I just like pelted it.
I got under it, and I was just like, because the fucker floated, and I was like, well, that's a horrible decision because you have no top or bottom armor. What are you doing?
But
still didn't matter because like I was getting drained like crazy. So I also got downed, and then Kato, clutch Kato, carried
carried
the team. But yeah,
CC's in the chat,
and then we got into the environment where the mission was going to end, and then it crashed. And then we did our final check of like,
was it like the game didn't crack? Like we got kicked out of the session. The session was now that's different than Rob tabbing, which was crashing the game.
Every time.
but this is like getting a network disconnect. We're all playing on PC.
So Kato and I had good performance. I think we like for
it
me
was
the game
fine.
Was smooth.
Fucking couldn't be me.
There was moments where like it started hitching when we were all running at the same time. And I'm playing on a kind of monster of a machine.
You two are playing on beasts, so you don't count.
Yeah.
And I think Ren and I have like more normal PCs, and like the game, you know, the art style doesn't look bad, but like it doesn't strike you as a game that you look at and go, dang, my PC is about to get, you know, like put through the ringer a little bit. It looks just...
Ooh, I'm about to get blasted.
Yeah, this GPU. Ooh,
it's not ultra realistic. Ooh. It's stylized in a way where there's a little less need for like high def, like high res detail.
It's like I'm gonna have to shoot up this DLSS in order to like keep it at this like level of detail and whatever.
Yeah.
It just was hitching all the time. Like it was, the performance was bad. Like every time I staked a vampire, I was just like, I don't know what to do with this.
Patrick,
and
how long would you say you were in single digit FPS?
It was random. So Ren and I both had the same situation where, I feel like it was happening less after the patch, but I feel like maybe it still happened, but like there was instances where you'd pause the game to go to your loadout and it would take a long time for the model to come in. And then the game would be operating at an extremely slow frame rate. And sometimes I'd have to jump into the options menu, come back out for the game to do whatever. I don't know. But like it was rare. Mm. You know, like when Kato and I were playing Jedi Survivor, like that game has lots of performance issues, still does. But like the issues were obvious, which like I'm in the open space. This is clearly harder to render. Frame rate and screen tearing bad. Whereas frequently in Redfall, my performance is abysmal, but there's no discernible like reason for it on the screen. Like I'm just walking down a street. There's no enemies, and like the frame rate will tank for a moment before it catches up again. Was that your experience how it worked, or was it significantly different?
No, it was basically exactly that. Just completely fucking inconsistent. I mean, like I was watching my computer's performance in the other window, because when I'm having issues with the game, I pull up my task manager to see what's going on internally.
Mm-hmm.
My memory was peaking constantly. I only have 16 gigabytes of RAM, and I'm wondering if this game is just such a massive memory hog that my system can't keep up with it. Because like anything, opening menus, staking vampires, moving from area to area would cause it.
I have 16 as well, and I have thought that maybe that is, you know, sometimes the bottleneck on my machine. But I don't know, like. It seemed like my machine should be able to handle it better than
Same.
It did. And we are currently in an era of PC ports being pretty abysmal, especially at launch.
I will say that even on the like Beast machine, it defaulted to using DLSS and rendering at 1080p. Even then, like there were times where it would hitch. Right, like it wasn't just like, and that, and thus it was smooth as butter on this Beast machine.
It was just better.
It was like it worked well 90% of the time, and then 10% of the time it would like have this weird slowdown where it would like hit sub 30 for, you know, a few seconds.
So the last part of this puzzle, though, the thing that really kind of floored me was, so we do all these missions together. And it's like we're winding down around this time, but I was like, the game is honest about this up front. You just can't fully believe the game will work this way. All the progress you're making through the story is only for the host's game.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you go and you're like, okay, that was fun. I played with Kato, but Kato has to go do other things. I want to continue playing, so I will host a game. Come on over to my game. You will begin at the beginning of the game, or wherever your game that was hosted on your computer left off. So all the story missions you did in the game you all were sharing with Kato, that's all gone. And now you are starting you're like picking up progress from where on your PC you left off. You keep levels-ish, but also when we loaded into my game, that's where we all noticed that like our levels were all appearing differently to one another.
I had the power upgrade, you know, like I had that stuff. So I think that might have just been like a visual bug on the UI when you were exiting out of the menu.
I mean, we got a wild visual bug of some sort when we reloaded back in, where it looked like everyone had unlocked their third ability, which is what you hit level four, I think. But none of us had actually hit level four. But it was on the
UI. It was on the UI
all of a sudden. Like,
yeah, it was rendering that stuff strangely. And the thing is, like, I can certainly understand why story progress would get complicated for the game to keep track of, and why that it would eliminate that as a form of progression that is carried across multiplayer sessions. But like, I unlocked the safe house. Yeah. Let the safe house stay unlocked. Like, let the fast travel, like, let these things that are, and because I actually don't knock it for the story bits, because I can see how the game would get really confusing on how it's tracking all of that between different sessions. But things that are non-narrative based, like a safe house, just like a fast travel point, I leave that in there so that when I'm doing the story parts, like, I can get to that stuff faster, I can move through it faster. I found that to be like a frustrating progress gatekeeping, because it just, when we got into Rob's game, it was like, I don't want to go through that town again that way the way we did before.
You don't wanna, but hang on, maybe the second time through you have more time to read all the little notes you find in the environment, with little journal entries like, things seem pretty bad in this town day and date. Oh, the disappearances are picking up, wonder what could be going on. things seem even worse. They're getting a little creepy in this town. I hope my husband comes back from the store. It's taking him longer to get home than I would think. And it's just like, it's not terrible writing, but also, if you're going to the arcane thing, there is none of that, like, ooh, here's fun little stories playing out in the across like the like records that you find in the environment. It's just kind of all like flavor text of like, ooh, vampires in the town, and just like hitting that beat again and again.
Yeah, no, it's not particularly, which is especially frustrating because the world details they have here are really good. The basic pitch on this game: Vampire Theranos shows up. Great. Already off to the races. But the thing that like has not been made clear so far to this point in the game is that like belief shapes reality because of like psychological phenomena in this world. And so like part of the reason that the vampire gods, quote unquote, are so powerful is because people believe them to be. And so you have this setting that is talking about like the ways in which we believe the rich to be powerful and in doing so give them that strength. And like that's a really easy narrative beat to play around with and do some interesting stuff with. And they do nothing. They do nothing with it in a way that is just like deeply frustrating.
I do think it's worth. So Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, did an interview with Kind of Funny, their Xbox podcast, XCast, this morning, I believe, like right on the heels of this getting like a lot of really. I mean, the reviews across the board were pretty abysmal. The game coming in with, you know, dropping at 60 frames a second on Xbox and launching with 30, like just a lot of negativity around. It's worth, reading a couple of quotes from Spencer about the game. Quote, there's nothing that's more difficult for me than disappointing the Xbox community and just to watch the community lose confidence. Be disappointed. I'm disappointed. I'm upset with myself. We'll revisit our process back to the announcement of 60 frames a second, and then we weren't shipping 60 frames a second. That was our punch in the chin, rightfully, a couple of weeks ago. The critical response was not what we wanted. I will pick myself up. What can we learn? How can we better? One thing I'll fight is what went wrong. There's clearly quality and execution things that we can do, but one thing I won't do is push back against creative aspirations of our teams. I'm a huge supporter of Arcane Austin. Their track record is awesome. I love a lot of their games and that they've built. They didn't hit their own internal goals when it launched. I think it's maybe a little too simplistic to say, quote, if you would have had just delayed it 3 months, the core creative of the game would have delivered on something that was different than what it was, end quote. And then in terms of like what's happening next, quote, the team at Arcane is taking the near-term feedback. We're still working on 60 frames a second. We have a good timeline for that. We're committed to getting that done, and we're going to continue to work on the game. I think we're going to continue to work the game. We've shown commitment to games like Sea of Thieves and Grounded to continue to build games, but I also know these games launch at $70, and I'm going to take full responsibility for launching a game that needs to be great. I don't have the quote in front of me, but it's something that was also worth noting that was a little interesting to hear it from an executive was they said that their internal reviews, like the consulting reviews they have done where they either like have media people consult on the game to do essentially a game review, but it is delivered internally to the company or folks internally that are doing a similar process. Those came in higher. Like the fact that the game was scoring in the 60s, if you're doing on a 100-point scale, they expected it to be higher than that. It is rare to have an executive disclose, like this process happens literally everywhere. Like every company does what they call mock reviews. And so it is, do not take that as though Xbox is doing something fascinating or interesting. That is industry standard and is very, when media people leave this job, like consulting and doing mock reviews is pretty normal, but interesting to see.
It is. Where do you get those gigs? Where can I? Anyone know some? Oh. Hang on. I
was going to ask if you'd ever done one, Rob. Because you had done freelance much longer than I have. I thought at one point maybe you would have danced in the world of doing a mock review before.
Can we acknowledge the pay difference between a mock review and a review for a publication?
Substantial.
Oh, it's, yeah. I would say 10 times. I've heard 10 times. Like, yeah, I've heard $2,500 versus $250.
You're getting 1990s magazine rates.
Yeah, you're getting paid per word.
$250 for like a review of a 40 to 80-hour video game sometimes. A mock review would be like $2,500 to $5,000 in terms of your consultancy budget. It's fucking crazy.
Patrick, I never did. I had some offers. I don't think I ever did a mock review. I might have done one, but in general, I tended to decline the offers because like I just didn't want to deal with the thing of like, oh, but now I have this other relationship. I didn't want to like mix relationships with some like a, of the like, that's places I cover. And that just where felt I've like been, it was going to be a mess.
Yes, when I've been in between gigs in the past and had like a PR person reach out that I've worked with at a publisher and was like, hey, like you would kind of fit the kind of games that we do. You want to do some consulting mock stuff?
But
I,
now, but welcome now.
To ethics free zone, baby.
I'd say the economic landscape is that.
I would have told you about Redfall. I would have told you.
The economic headwinds are turning, and Rob Zachney would love to consult for your video game.
Yeah,
or maybe they fucked up and gave the good bill to the mock reviewer.
I mean, it's hard to know. Like, let's be clear. Like, Spencer is going out doing the hey, I'm gonna go out there and take the hard questions. Like when we're in the midst of something that isn't going really well for us.
And I also admire he throws the shield up around the team there. Like I think as best he can. Like I think the process he is defending sounds like a decent one in principle, though the results like raise concerns. Mm-hmm. And I think there is no getting around the fact that like Arcane Austin didn't deliver like on the assignment here. The question is about that, but like delaying a few months wouldn't have changed things. I don't know. Like maybe it would have, but I do see pretty profound problems here. Like maybe this was a game in a place where already it was clear that like this just isn't coming together right.
But they let I floated this when we were playing it where. If you took the game that exists right now, the Redfall that exists right now, if that shipped as an early access thing, I don't know that people would be over the moon for it, but I think people would look at it and go, there's promise here. Like this could be something interesting a year from now. And Microsoft just did this with Grounded, a game that I have not played, but I have heard nothing but awesome things about, and that it wasn't perfect or had even a ton of content when it launched a year and a half ago. But the 1.0 that happened I think like last year, I've heard like rave reviews about what Obsidian was able to put together. And that is an example of like a studio going off script and doing something fundamentally different and then finding their footing through a process with the community. But like launching a game at $70, having it come out of the gate really hot and creatively, like not have like closed the loop. This isn't a game that I expect them to iterate on for a year. I expect them to deliver 60 frames a second. I expect them to deliver like the DLC that was already being worked on. And I expect them to do the sort of like balance and design tweaks that were like you would expect from a big game that has just shipped. This isn't something that's going to feel like fundamentally different a year from now. It's just going to be like a better version or a cleaner version of what already exists. And I think as we've all pointed out, like the problems here go deeper than, the UI elements showing what level is like correct when we join a multiplayer game.
Well, the one caveat I'll say is we don't like, I don't think we know yet how the whole picture comes together, right? Sure. Like we're not going to find out because I'm not going to play enough to see what like mid to late game is, but like it is possible that there is a payoff coming that we just haven't seen. Mm-hmm. And if you can smooth out this onboarding stuff and like make the whole thing hang together, because I think so much of like, one reason we're not going to see this is also because like there's just a lot of annoying friction to play the game. Every time we get kicked from the session, I stared for a long time at the like connect button. I was real unsure if I just don't take this as a sign. But maybe there is something that as you play along, sort of the fact that you're sharing an open world and going on adventures across this really like detailed space, maybe that begins to pay off. Maybe as you get deeper into those skill webs and encounter different enemy types, you do start seeing like, oh, there are cool systemic interactions happening here. But I think it has the problem of because they gated so much of what your character can do right at the start, and then maybe interesting enemies show up later, but right now everything is a trash mob effectively. There is nothing in the first 2-3 hours of the game that indicates an interesting shooter is going to break out here, or that like you will have an interesting time playing it. And, you know, it's a very far cry. Like, if I wanted to, like, the Destiny comparison invites itself, because even like beating up on trash mobs in Destiny is fun because the weapons are fun. Things feel good. Mm-hmm. Traversal feels good. You know, it's it even like Destiny at its most like least challenging, least engaging is still kind of like has this baseline satisfaction that keeps you in it. And then it doesn't take long before you start seeing enemies that mix things up and force you to like change tactics or change weapon loadouts. Here, it's just those, you know, the entire onboarding stage of this is like, none of this is fun. And there might be different like ways of playing this game, but like, I see no reason to experiment with that, because like all the challenges you encounter play out the exact same way. So, you know, why am I going to shift approaches to try to make my own fun with a sandless sandbox? Anyway, so that's Redfall. And, yep. You know, yeah, you know,
it stinks, though. We just don't get that many Arcane games. And, you know, yeah. to have this one not click, even for what it was, even though it was fundamentally trying to do something a little bit different than what I expect from the studio or like from the studio. You know, you got to respect, you know, studios trying different things. Maybe they'll make something you like that you didn't, you know, look at Hi-Fi Rush. I wanted Evil Within 3. I still want Evil Within 3. But hell yeah, I'm glad they made Hi-Fi Rush. That game is sick. You just don't get games from the studio or just from studios in general, right? Games take so long. And so to have a creative misfire means, all right, you know, is the next time an Arcane logo is on my PC or Xbox 2 years from now? And I'm just bummed that Redfall didn't turn out well. Like, yeah, like, and that stinks.
And whatever Spencer says, does that, like, internally, are they actually like, we totally believe in this team, or is this going to be
no clue? No clue.
That's another part of this. But anyway, we'll leave Redfall there. We're going to take a quick break.
Go to the next one.
All right, here's what I've been sitting on for a minute, and it's relevant actually.
Oh, cool.
But I won't be able to answer it, so hopefully people can write in and answer it. Dear Waypoint, what was the first game to establish the loot color hierarchy of gray, green, blue, purple, orange? Hmm. Regards, Waz. My assumption would be it was Diablo. That's where I first encountered it. But does it predate Diablo? Every game pretty religiously sticks to this, right? I feel like there may have been games that mixed around purple and orange, what it signified. But I think it's pretty stable now.
Yeah.
Do you think it was Diablo?
A cursory Google search is suggesting that the concept of color-coded loot rarity is popularized with the 1996 game Diablo, whose designer, David Brevik, took the... took the idea from the roguelike video game Angband.
Okay.
So it's not, so I guess it looks like perhaps Angband from Wikipedia is a dungeon crawling roguelike video game derived from Umoria. So does it go deeper into Umoria? I'm not sure.
Go deeper.
The current version of Angband is available for all major operating systems, including Unix, Windows, Mac OS, and Android, is identified as one of the major roguelikes by John Harris. The goal of Angband is to survive 100 floor levels of the fortress Angband in order to defeat Morgoth. The game is reputed to be extremely difficult. So it sounds like Diablo popularizes a concept that existed in roguelikes. And this comes out in 1990 is the original. So it goes as far back as 1990, and then 1996 Diablo takes it mainstream.
And now we're going to take a quick break here. And hey, remember, Waypoint Plus listeners get the podcast ad free. You can learn more at waypointplus.com.
Still true. That guess.
Oh, people are not dissuaded. People are signing up. They're like, we have to fund your last month.
Yeah.
We have to make sure, like, we've seen the headlines about Vice. You kids are getting your severance. We're going to make sure of it. So, you know, God bless y'all for doing that. But for those who may also want to tilt at a windmill, go to waypointplus.com and see how you can get the ad-free feed. We'll be back after this. Actually, you know, since there's a lot of uncertainty about how we turn this off, how we bring the great machine to its close, we talked to the folks who run Waypoint Plus, and what we can do right now is we paused all renewals till sometime after June 2nd, at which point hopefully we will figure out what's happening with this, what the wind down process looks like. But in the meantime, for people who, you know, have active subscriptions and were signed up, we stopped the thing where you're just going to get rung up. Like, it would be very poor form if you got rung up for a donation to Waypoint Plus on June 2nd, let us say. So we've taken steps to make sure that won't happen. There will be no additional charges for active members as we wind this down. If you're a new member, I don't know. Probably they want their $5, but I assume you knew that going in.
That's your own fault.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And we're back. Ren.
Hi.
I think it's safe to say that Street Fighter V was not beloved.
No, not even a little bit. No, not even really a tiny bit. If we're
and after a rocky launch, we never got to that thing of we will win that community back and, like, you know, win people over. Well, it feels like it got better.
It got better. The end of Street Fighter V, with Idom's Evo run, is the best send-off that game could have gotten. Idom fucking, like a phoenix from the ashes, made Street Fighter V look good. And, like, people really liked it for a consistent period of time, which is not the case. However, it ended up in an okay place. Street Fighter VI, on the other hand, people are very excited about because that game is gorgeous. It is extremely pretty. It adds a ton of new system mechanics that I think are really interesting and have a ton of potential. And I played it at a press event last week.
Oh, like what day? I'm just curious. Was anything going on
when you went to the press event? It was Friday.
The day after we were told.
The day after.
So how many well wishes did you have to fend off?
Zero.
Like, okay, nobody was like...
No one knew me. No one in that fucking room knew me or had any idea who I was. That was a room full of, I believe, influencers. So I was...
Oh.
I was good. That was content creators, so I did not have to know anyone. At least I believe. I didn't actually ask who anyone else in that room was. I just know I didn't recognize any of them, and so I assumed they weren't Games Press. Which is all to say that, I played Street Fighter VI. I played about 90 minutes of the, like, normal, you can just fight people. You can fight the other characters in the video game, the video game that you bought mode. And then I put about 90 minutes into their world tour mode, which is their, like, arcade beat 'em up, like, fighting game RPG. That they've also
beat them up, like,
you know, it's not
you're out on the streets getting in fights, or is
I can walk up, you can walk up to anybody and be like, do you want to fight right now?
Wait,
and I'm not doing a bit.
I'm shaken.
I'm not doing
because in Street Fighter V, it was just like narrative vignettes of, like,
no,
hey, these characters are like, oh, no, good to see you, let's brawl, and then you just do Street Fighter matches.
No, that's your standard fighting game story mode.
Yeah, no,
right?
Wrong. Foolish. Foolish. No, that's arcade mode. No, World Tour, you make a character, Rob.
Oh, yes.
In a character creator.
Yeah.
It's a very involved character creator.
I've seen some you can make real some freaks.
Fucked up guys.
Yeah, I've seen make some real freaks online.
Ooh, you can make some real grimy boys.
What and if, so
you
go what if the real tall, creator. But tiny little arms? Like real tall, but tiny little T-Rex arms. Like real big, strong legs, but tiny little
affect,
T-Rex arms.
Will it affect their actual reach? Like, yes. Will, yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it will. And so you make your little character, you go into the world, and there's just regular human beings walking around Metro City, and you can beat the shit out of them. If you see someone on the street and you're like, I want to tussle, you can go rounds with them. You can,
what is like, is it, you just punch them in the face and then like a combat begins, or like no. Is there a little dialogue? Is it no, just like, hey, this is a world where people just love to fight?
It's a world where people love to see you walk up and you like clasp hands and you do the like fucking
commando, like
predator grasp, and then you fight each other. Or alternatively, you use one of your world abilities and you do a special move on them that starts the fight with them being weakened. So you can truly just roll up and just get someone. You could show up and be like, guess what, motherfucker, I'm gonna shoryuken you in the street. You're with your kids today. Not anymore. Now you're fighting me.
Are there people with kids like walking around?
I don't remember actually.
I'm just like, because it seems like maybe this is actually more of a, you know, look, you come to live here. This is Fight City, baby.
This is Fight City. Yeah.
It's legal.
Let me pull up a clip. Street, because Rob looks in confused. World.
Oh, it sounds hilarious. I'm just thinking about living this. In a world where, like, randomly a Street Fighter person could come up and just wreck your shit.
I love the deck. That's what it's called, right? The subtitle. Yeah. How long have we been doing this? I've suddenly forgotten the word for that. Mm-hmm.
It is correct. Yes, that's the thing that goes under the headline.
Yeah, on the Game Informer preview article, like a dragon punch. Yeah.
That's cute.
I have seen headlines that were comparing it to like Yakuza Light.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it's fine. Here's the thing. It's not for me. It does not have what I go to fighting games for, which is like combat.
I don't think
depth.
It's meant for you, though. Right.
No,
like,
it's
I think
not,
in theory, this is supposed to be for me.
Right.
Is like, yeah. Hey.
Well, hang on, but like, Ren, are you saying that mode or the entire game?
That mode. Like,
OK. Yeah.
This mode.
Street Fighter still feels good. Like.
This mode does not lock you into, but pushes you towards the modern control scheme. And the modern control scheme is, what's the word? Worse. It's worse.
Square never for me. You'd like to fight somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Level Patrick. 2 Dahlia, this lady in a dress is just like, fucking let's throw down.
But I think the World Tour mode is, to me, not fun. It's not like fun or interesting. It's kind of bad because you're just able to spam basic like special moves against them and they can't really respond to it. Or you can just throw them infinitely because the AI is not very good on like the random people in the street. And so like...
But seen as like a... like long version of a training mode. In which, like, look, sitting going to a training mode, like, I don't want to sit and memorize the moves. Show me all the moves, and I'm going to sit here and just practice them.
This is giving too many Yakuza vibes. There's too much judgment happening here, where it's.
This is not like an extended version of the training mode. Your character only has access to abilities from like NPCs and like Street Fighter characters they've met in the world. So, for example, you can borrow some of like Chun-Li's special moves or some
but
of
after
like
you meet Chun-Li.
Yes, exactly. Okay, only well, after you meet her in the story do you get access to her like moves. Ooh. And so like it's fine, but like. Again, Patrick, like this is I would say it's not like a training mode because it again wants you to use the modern control scheme, which is I to my knowledge not particularly usable in like competitive play.
But I don't want to be in competitive play.
No, but I just want to understand. But then,
you're learning.
If the end state of playing Street Fighter is going to my local tournament, that's not what I consider to be the end state necessarily.
What do you consider the end state to be?
for me personally, yes. It's just like having a good time.
Then yeah, you'll have a great time with this.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing. I'm just sort of trying to come at it from the perspective like, I don't know that there's a version of this that would be for you necessarily. This may not still be a bad mode. Like, it's their first time doing something this big. We have seen single, like, the closest analog to this is, you know, Rob, all of the sports games that have tried single player versions, right? And that has gone up, like, that is not a universal good in all of these games. They don't always, they aren't always... interesting or successful.
Yeah, the concept doesn't always work. I don't know. Yeah, I think there's like an engaging, goofy energy to this for sure. But also, if it is mostly just you're walking up to people and like, you know,
spamming beating special them up moves,
with like square. That'll be a little bit tedious. But
that is what it was for the hour and a half I played. Like, it was to the point where, so the demo I did was about 3 hours long. They wanted us to stay in World Tour mode, and I didn't, so I left earlier. It technically went to, 5:45, and I, finished at, 5-ish, because I was just like, I don't think I need any more of this. I would have much rather been given, 2 hours to actually play the video game. To actually play the fight as opposed to an hour.
But it was
and
like
half,
one of those events then, where it's like, okay, gang, we're moving on to World Tour mode.
Yes, and exactly.
It's like, but I was actually getting a lot out of the other mode. Yeah. It's always frustrating when an event goes that way.
Yeah. And I was actually having fun, learning about this system. Like, I have thoughts about the other mode. Like, World Tour, I have no thoughts about other than, I don't like it very much.
Let's go to the other mode then. Core Street Fighter.
Core Street Fighter, great. I'm thrilled. The system mechanics they've added in this game. I'm trying to remember the actual name. I think it's the drive gauge, maybe the term that they're using. But there is basically a set of new universal moves and universal resources that all characters have access to. One of them basically gives you super armor and then has you do an attack with a big stun. And so it can be really punishing if someone hits you with the wrong thing. But you can beat that with a parry by doing a drive parry, which completely nullifies all damage and stuns the opponent slightly. And those basic system mechanics are great. I like the resource that they're using. You also have overdrive attacks, which are improved versions of your specials that use that same gauge. But the thing that I really liked was I put time primarily into Menon, who is the new, I believe she's a dancer. Yes, she's an ice skater and Olympic judoka.
Nice.
Yeah, she fucking rules. And she's a grappler. And to put this into context, grapplers in fighting games are almost universally hated by everyone who doesn't play them. Because grapplers work on the I only have to be right once school of game design, which is if other characters have to guess right 8 times in a match to fully kill someone because their combos only do so much damage, grapplers only have to be right once or twice. They are extremely high risk, extremely high reward, which can make playing against them a fucking nightmare. And they're also usually referred to as big body characters, so they are heavier, they can be sometimes harder to combo with, etc, right? This is the standard role that grapplers fall into. Menon is a grappler, but one that I think is very smartly designed in that she doesn't become a you only have to be right once character until you've earned that, where every time she lands one of her grabs, it increases the power of the next grab. Across the course of the game, not the course of the round, over the course of the set. So if you are in if you're in a best 2 out of 3 and you lose the first one but get a couple of grabs off, you will go into round 2 and 3 significantly stronger. And so effectively she's a momentum based grappler, which is not really a thing in this way.
Ever done anything that's going to go from round to round across a set?
Yeah, some games definitely do this. This is like
Street Fighter. Has Street Fighter ever done it?
I think so.
Did what's his face's like mask and claw stay down if you didn't pick him up before the round end? Or did we set it round? I forget. But I think
they stay down.
Yeah,
but this is not like novel. This is not like novel even by Street Fighter standards. I do not believe. However, it's a really cool implementation of this because it means that effectively Menon gets to be extremely fucking powerful. Her level 5 grabs are disgusting. They will take away like a quarter, like a third of your health bar if you're not careful from a single combo. But she has to work for it by like having landed grabs with like weaker versions of all of her abilities earlier in the match. And I really, really like her basic combo structure. I really like her central mechanics. The only problem was that I went to this preview event and I did not have access to the kind of controller that I used. And so I felt like I was flopping around like a little dumb fish baby, like a little stupid baby fish.
Were they just giving...
slapping my dumb hands across the fight stick and across the PS5 controller.
I was about to ask, did they give you pads or fight sticks?
It gave us access to both. The problem is that I know how to use neither effectively, especially because Menon's combos are pretty execution intensive. They have like some pretty tight timing windows in there. And as someone who doesn't use stick, I was not able to like execute them properly.
Are you an Xbox controller? Or?
No. I use keyboard. Or a hitbox, which is a leverless.
Yeah.
I want a leverless controller. The problem is that they're $300. but yeah, I play leverless, and so trying to play with a traditional fight stick made me try and almost lose my fucking mind. As did playing with a basic controller. At one point, shout out to the guy at the agency that was holding this event. Walked past, I was like, yeah, I hate using pad. I'm not good at it. And he's like, you're doing fine on pad. And I was like, thanks. thank you for the patronage. But that was the only like thing that like I think that the event was definitely a little bit mired for me by the fact that I had just been laid off and I was using a control scheme that I did not like. And I was playing a mode that I did not like. And yet, in spite of all of these factors, I came away really impressed and like really excited for Street Fighter VI.
The vibes around the game have been really good.
Listen, Capcom, we're out of here on June 2nd, the release of Street Fighter VI.
Oh, shit.
I request Capcom that you do me one final kindness before I go off into the great blue yonder. And you please give me Street Fighter VI when I'm little.
I did just submit a like review request I got something across my desk for Diablo 4. They're like
hoovering up review.
They were like, we'll probably reach out on June 1st. I was like, well, hopefully.
You better.
Well, I mean, I filled out a form. I think like in theory, you know, would get access and you know.
Ooh, delicious codes.
I'll say this: a number of PR folk I've talked to have like done the thing of, hey, really sorry to hear this has happened. If you still want this event invite, if you still want these codes, like, you know, obviously, you know, happy to send them along. At least you don't get the daily, like, kick in the teeth of, like, you're not going to be an outlet by then, buddy. So you can wait in line like everybody else. At least you don't get, that doesn't end up happening. But, yeah, if Street Fighter VI can overcome all those headwinds, then you know, maybe something special is going on. It sounds I'm really great. Excited.
Yeah. The fighting game freak has logged on and she's mostly satisfied.
But wouldn't you like a mock review from somebody who doesn't play fighting games at all and has no idea what the state of the genre is? Don't you want some sort of insight into that segment of the market? Hey, hit me up. You know where to find me.
All right. Welcome to my doesn't know shit consultancy firm.
Yeah.
Ask me anything. Can't answer.
Look, the problem is everyone's like, you get too many experts. You get too many people who know shit. What about the novice who hasn't even really figured out what they're showing up to? How do you reach those people? Talk to me.
Welcome to Fuck If I Know Games.
That's how I approach every day.
We're a consultancy firm built around not knowing shit.
Hey, it's question bucket time. So I guess we can just, you know, we can just dig into it.
But which question bucket are you picking out of
the
now?
Current one?
Well, this is technically a transition, so I think you have to go to the bottom again.
I will go to the bottom.
Thanks, Rob.
Let me just
thanks.
Let me just resort here.
The people from March 2017. Thank you.
It's like when you drop a liquid ball bearing down the big tube that they make ball bearings in, and it pings off the ground. We're doing that. Got to go to the bottom of the bucket and go back to the top, Rob. Can't start at the top. Your bearing won't be done.
Brad writes, "Dear Waypointalists, I've always believed that a game's design possesses its own aesthetic, but too often the critical discourse around the medium continues to judge design choices in black and white." Man, we all talked so differently back here, back then. 2017, we're all just like fun. We're just like speaking in essays and writing in essays.
It's the height of Waypoint intellectualism, and now it's like, hey guys, like, what kind of greasy ass food do you want to put in your fucking chompers? Like, do you feel weird?
All right.
My mouth hurts.
But too often, the critical discourse
good or bad
around the medium continues to judge design choices in black and white terms like good and bad or broken. People who are willing to say a game's visual design or music can be appreciated largely as a matter of personal taste will still fall into the trap of dismissing gameplay systems or mechanics they don't find engaging as misguided or ill-considered or even accidental. This feels like a terrible disservice to the art of game design, which can result in a tableau of interlocking systems that are every bit as composed and intentional as other collaborative works of art. And like other mediums, not every game's design aesthetic will appeal to everyone the same way. At times, it feels like certain games end up being evaluated not for what those choices accomplish, but rather for failing to bend to theoretical mainstream expectations. Thoughts?
I mean,
so true, bestie.
I mean, that's kind of the whole thing with criticism, right? It's like you can only.
I can't imagine outside myself totally. Like, it's right. It's like it is possible. Like, so I think there's a couple things. Like, there are games where I can say this game is making choices differently from a different like genre standard, and here's why I think that genre standard, like, there's a reason it defines the space. Like, if we're talking like Redfall and Destiny, right? Like, there's a reason we go to Destiny a lot to discuss like how things work. That game has its issues, but there's certain things it's very, very good at, and so that does like sort of form maybe an unfair not expectation, but like informs how you see things operating in that space. And I think I'd like to think I can still see where people are making different choices from like what Bungie did with Destiny and like going for something different and like try to like evaluate that in terms of how well does it work for me. But like, you know, reading this letter after like talking about a game like Redfall, I think the problem is I can't totally like there's two things I can't. From what I am playing, parse out what the underlying concept is here. That if everything was working well, right, the thing that like they thought was they were building toward that was really going to be fun, I can't quite parse out what that looks like because there's too many places where the thing feels slightly out of joint. But the other part of it is, you know, when I look at the things that it is doing differently from games I do like, the ways it is leaving me cold, I can't quite get to the place where, while these combat encounters feel bad to me and uninteresting, I can imagine the people who do like this kind of combat encounter because it just feels like a profoundly broken and interesting combat encounter.
Yeah, I think that, like, honestly, I think that the industry has gotten not good, but certainly like okay about occasionally, at least from like a critical standpoint. I think it has become commonplace for people to go, maybe just not for me. A little bit more frequently in the last few years, which has been good to see. In the 6 years since this question,
I've always I think actually like doing too much of this has been one of my big weaknesses as a critic, though. Like going back a long time, because I've always so many games I've played where it's like I can kind of see like why someone might like this, but it's not working for me. But there's a lot of games where I give them a huge benefit of the doubt because I'm like, you know, like, there are people who enjoy these sorts of systems that might enjoy what this game is going for. But I often go back and I read those reviews and I see myself hedging too much. Like, it is too much like imagining another person who likes things maybe I don't like.
Did you find that it tends to be in games that are more broad, like speaking to broader audiences, and thus like have like this big umbrella, big tent design, whereas like you're less likely to fall into that trap when, you know, like,
no, actually,
for like, think, you specifically, it's like,
I think it's the reverse. Like,
okay.
So you're, yeah. So sorry, I'd like to cut you up, but I think it's a good question. No. I was interested in it. I think it is the reverse, where it is actually the experiences coming from like the strategy space and such that make me more likely to do that in other places. Because in the strategy space, so often what people are into gets so specific. Like, I saw the Waypoint Discord the other day was noting that a new game called Rule the Waves 3 came out. There have been two of these other ones. And remember the game I was talking about, Ultimate Admiral Dreadnoughts, where it's like build your own ship and everything? That game is like, by any reasonable standards, really deep down in the weeds, gnarly, like design your own ships and have them go fight. Rule the Waves, this is the third installment of this. People love this shit. People in my life, like people I talk to in strategy spaces, adore this fucking game. If you look up Rule the Waves 3, it is like Windows 3.1 style interface. It is basically like spreadsheet manager, but for battleships. And that is how that game.
Good God.
And so the, like,
I'm looking at it now.
So getting in, like, coming from strategy space, there are so many places where it's like, okay, I don't like this, but I also know exactly who it is for, and they're going to eat this shit up. And I think that ended up extending to a lot of my criticism of like broader, more mainstream games, because in the strategy space, I sort of have, like, if I'm speaking to people who are exactly like me, I'm probably speaking to like very few people, so I do need to be able to unpack, like, okay, if we're talking about like which bucket of 4X game sicko we're discussing here, or grand strategy person, I need to sort of be able to imagine, like, how would the people in the various buckets react to this game? Where is it actually trying to fall? How well might it succeed? But I think it's a flawed approach the more I've sort of meditated over it, because fundamentally, like, if I'm not in that bucket, I can't actually speak to what folks there would like. I think I know what they like, but I'm not in there with them, so I don't actually know. And so I think this is where I end up, if anything, I've probably been too willing to hedge along those lines by thinking about the person that this construction of the game could have been intended for.
You're making up a guy in your head to be nice to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is the big thing that people kind of don't really consider about criticism very often, of like any media, honestly. Like, look at like the way that people react around movie reviews these days. Just like, the person is most likely to, that is doing any sort of criticism, is most likely to pull on their own, like, be able to pull on their own specific experiences and their specific tastes. And the point of you, like, of there being many critics that exist in the world is that you can find someone who aligns with your tastes, and you can, like, compare different people's tastes to try to get a better sense of a thing before you interact with it. But, like, there's, I mean, you know, we're human beings. There's no way you're going to accurately predict somebody else's, like, likes and dislikes, apart from just kind of generalization.
Right. I can play a game and I'm like, oh man, my friend Kata would really love all the card mechanics in this. And
oh my god!
But then Kata actually gets it, like, well, they suck, because it's just, like, they're bad card mechanics, and like the concept doesn't work. And here's why. And because Kata's in that space, Kata can unpack cards. Like, here's why it misfires.
The amount of times that people have maybe been like pointed me towards a thing that is like, look, it's cards, and I look at it, I'm like,
every month on Waypoint, it's like Christmas with the relatives who are like, oh, we got you a card game. We know how you love card games, Kato. Yeah. Hey, take a little picture with put the card game in front of your chest. Say cheese.
And click. Look, I'm happy to get the deluge so that I can pick out the ones that actually seem interesting, because sometimes you might miss something otherwise. But still, there are a lot where it's just like the base premise is like, that's not enough to pull me in. So I'm going to. I want to pass it by, but yeah, like just this idea of like, there's no, I don't know, there's no way to like really like fully be outside yourself and your and yet, history. Like, this,
all that's true. The thing that comes to mind for me is, I just don't give a shit about customizing my characters or like base building things in games.
Yeah.
And so like Fallout 4, for example, I don't think that game's very good, but it was weird for me to play that game initially because it was clear the game was communicating to me, hey, base building, customization, this is a huge part of what we're doing here. And I said, I'm going to sweep that aside and I'm going to see what the story is here. And I didn't think the story was very good, but I know that like a huge part of what people loved about Fallout 4 was all of that stuff. And I can look at it and go, I can paint the picture of who this is for. I bet they're going to like it. I don't like it. Do I think the game is then bad because I don't like it? Jedi Survivor is a small version of this. Kato, I don't need 900 little lightsaber pieces. I'm never going to change that thing over the next 40 hours. But I know some people are probably going to go, this is sick that they have made 300 different little lightsaber pieces I can change in and out. For me as a critic, then it is unsatisfying for me to solve a puzzle and in that box is a little thing at the bottom of the lightsaber that gets to change.
Yeah.
That is unsatisfying to me. But is it's satisfying to a lot of people. And so how do I interpret that and like think about how I'm thinking about the game? It has accomplished its goal relative to what I am satisfied by. I would rather the power up or something else there as the reward.
Right.
But I can recognize that there is going to be a lot of people that go, that's sick. Yeah. Like, actually, I do want like that piece on my lightsaber. And so that's like, because that is like customizability is a big thing with me that I just do not broadly give a shit about. And so then I have trouble grappling with games that make that a huge component of themselves because I don't necessarily know what to do with
it. I think ultimately what we end up doing, like what good criticism ends up doing, is like acknowledging that sort of thing like up front as like I'm not this type of person, so I can't I can imagine that maybe someone will enjoy that thing, but then you point out the rest of the things around it that you do enjoy and can like speak to more personally, right? But this like the kind of question asker, there was like this like second form of like just the imagining of that other person that exists was being left on the table, right?
Okay, like, you know what was actually like ended up being a really good exercise for me? Reviewing that fucking TV. It wasn't a video game. It was one of the most specific, like, it was a type of, like, criticism or review I hadn't written, like, ever. It was out of my wheelhouse, and it was one of the specific things I had written because it was, like, I had read so many generals' takes on this thing, and I'm like, but here's what I needed it to do. Here's what I wanted in this fucking thing. And like, here, as someone who cares about those things, is how it actually lands in reality. And that process was really clarifying because it was a lot of stuff that I've almost like trained myself out of doing when like talking about games. And here it was like, I think because of also how like the OLED Flex become like almost a running gag on the podcast that like we're starting from this position of it's almost a joke that I'm doing this to begin with because this is so far down this fucking rabbit hole. So I'm just going to be a total like I'm just going to go completely like buck wild on this and review the shit out of this thing, get really specific and like focused in on marginal details about this that matter a lot to me. And at the end of that process, I was like, there was a lot there that I don't fully like grant myself permission to do when reviewing a game now. And so it ended up being like a good exercise because it was like a lot of habits that I've sort of trained myself into were taken away with the context. And so that was, it was just an odd thing. Cause I don't know. I don't fully know where this started to become almost reflexive for me. But it's like, I think it does stem from the fact that like, there is a lot of, especially, you know, as you hang out in this job, you get more and more people asking, like, it's funny. You review a game and you'll have people respond to your tweet of the review asking you like, so should I get it? Like, you know, what do you, but a lot of times it's framed as, what do you think of it from me? If it's a friend or something.
Right.
And you will get a lot of people who want to know what, like, how you evaluate it for someone like them. And so I think I began to, like, start writing a little bit to try and answer a bit what people were already asking, which is, like, well, for someone who doesn't bring all those, like, biases and, like niche interests that you do, like, how would you evaluate if you can set aside some of that stuff? And I like being helpful. I like answering people's questions. So I started kind of reflexively doing that of, like, well, actually, you know, if for someone real different than me, maybe you would like it. Maybe it is good. And, yeah, I think that's how you get there. I think broadly that answers that question. I think fundamentally, like, I think it's what Brad's alluding to here is kind of untenable for a critic in terms of how things live in the world. Let's go back to the modern question bucket.
Wait, sorry, you got this. Rob, what about your heart out?
That is a very good point. that is a great
truly
point.
Truly incredible. Woo! Truly. Woo! Rob, you are a master of the form.
Yeah, so anyway, that's
bye.
Are we good? That's a podcast, right?
That's a fun.
That was a good question. Look, that was a great question. That was a great question from the past. Like, that was like a full 10-minute answer. Like, thank you, 2017.
All right, well, that's a wrap on today's episode of Waypoint Radio. Fuck capitalism. Go home.
I'm hitting stop on my recording.
I'm hitting stop.
I'm hitting stop.
Boop. Yeah. All right. Let's go on 33.
Wait, hold on. My desk is not picking up my microphone. It's not recording.
Let's go later.
Sorry. I don't know why.
Let's just, you know.
It's not. My device is like.
Guys, let's be bad. Let's go later. Let's make a day of it.
Time to take a turn about the room.
But we do need to hurry because we're just trying to catch a break in the vomit storms, I guess.
No, we're. I mean, yes, but it's my wife's problem at the moment, and then it'll be my problem in a couple
Damn.
Hours.
Damn.
That's called parenting, unfortunately. Like, that's no diss on my wife. That is just a high five. Like,
it's just Darkest Dungeon rotating your two meat shields.
You just rotate. Yes, you are. Yeah. For, you know, hopefully,
we're getting on the other side of it, but. Impossible to say. Okay, it's picking it up now.
All right, let's go on 33.
Today's quote, where is it? Do or do not. There is no.
Are you kidding me?
There is no try.
It's the fucking day. Of course they.
Wait. Why does he say
there is no try?
Motherfuckers should say
no try. There is.
What are we doing?
Not even consistent.
Not even fucking consistent.
Just shut up, you little green bastard.
What a gay little frog.
I watched that guy fucking die last night, and I was like the only person in the theater to go like, woo.
Oh no, you did not.
It was a quieter woo than that, but
Kyle, sometimes our online voice needs to not come out.
Too AMCA pilled.
That is, other people are gonna
This kid's just straight sicko. He likes it when Yoda dies.
Rest in piss, you green wrinkled frog.
Oh, normal people haven't listened to hundreds of hours about a cartoon.
Normal people haven't watched the Clone Wars at this point?
Yeah, no.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.